This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 26th of November, 1951. The title of this lecture is An Analysis of Memory and Human Aberration and Psychosomatic Illness, Part 2. This lecture is 47 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Small piece of news. Last week I thought we would have them, Foyle. But we finally do have them tonight. And that is advanced procedure and axioms. Advanced procedure consists of 14 steps in auditing, 15 actually, although step 15 is a recheck, which puts together this approach to auditing, and which is relatively fast. It tells the auditor what to do and when to do it. It also would space a pre-clear along at various stages so that the hit or miss addresses to cases wouldn't occur. The material which I'm giving you tonight is to some degree a summation of that, but more importantly, it goes in on the step, I've forgotten which act it is, Act 8, I guess, of running all emotion on the case. And the button I'm about to give you comes under that heading. It is not in the book, but the book is very inclusive. Now, as those of you who are very cognizant of this situation are concerned, a unit memory can often be seen, heard, felt, so forth, all over again. In other words, full perception of the memory itself is potentially possible. Now, here's a little bombshell for you that wipes out something in the first book. It's not particularly desirable, and it's very far from necessary. And when it's on to the extent of a wide open case, watch out. Almost any case, no matter how occluded, has a few visios, a few little pictures. Almost any wide open case, no matter how wide open, has a few areas of occlusion. In an occluded case, when he tries to look at something he's looked at before, he sees black and lots of it. And your wide open case, looking at something else, something he has looked at before, generally sees something else. Now, this is phenomena which was slightly known before, but not to the extent that it's been used in Dianetics. This phenomena is present in anybody. And in old texts, they said it was present usually in morons and children. But they knew nothing about awake returning. For instance, they thought a person had to be hypnotized in order to look at any of his memories, which should give you some kind of an idea how utterly debased the whole understanding of the mind was. Mind you, a person had to be hypnotized to look at a memory. In other words, not only could another person not do it for him, but also there had to be a special mumbo-jumbo in order to throw this fellow into some kind of a hypnotic trance, get him sit very quietly, put himself wholly in the possession of a hypnotist, and then the hypnotist could handle what? The unit memories of the individual. Here's another point of error. We've talked about returning. Sure. You can hang together your theta facsimiles to a point where you've got a time track. Yeah, there's a time track. There's a unit of time on each one of them. But an individual handling his facsimiles could take any unit off of the time track and move it into present time, take a look at it. Not only that, he can look at any part of it he wants to. And if he's just looking for the data and conclusions, we have what is known as memory. What we commonly call memory. I remember that I went someplace. I remember that this and that. He isn't looking at anything. He isn't really calling any part of this facsimile into play except one. And that's just the conclusion of the data. So that's very easily called back. Actually, the whole package comes along with it. And if he wanted to really look it over, and it had a lot of pain in it, and he was pretty low down the tone scale, he could get latched up in it just by remembering it. I've run into some cases recently where individuals tried to remember something that had happened to them so hard that they got the memory back, the memory package back, complete. Now that's your psychosomatic illness. It can turn on in full everything. If you put a person on the couch, you can put him so thoroughly into a unit memory that he conceives of himself as the size, same taste that were present, everything, complete, just as though he were right there. That would be almost full returning. It's not desirable. It's not even useful. If you've been struggling for visio and sonic, I'm sorry to have to tell you that Hubbard, who is never wrong, has been wrong. Skip it. The stuff is so unimportant as to be useless. All you want is the data, if you want that. That's all you want. But more important even than the data is the ability to handle these things, these unit memories. Handle your memory, you have achieved very full self-determinism. You can achieve a self-determinism above this point, which makes it unnecessary for you to handle any memory. Up here, in this band, is I am. I know. I know is in that band. Anybody here in that band would know all there is to know about epistemology. Know. Knowledge. All knowledge is there. Did you ever see a fella walk out and pick up a set of golf clubs and knock a ball down the line, 220 yards or something of the sort, and say, gee, I think I like golf, and he goes on and he plays golf for a few days. All of a sudden he gets terrible, he never gets that good afterwards. You ever see this happen? Well, it's very simple. The fellow walked up, looked at the golf clubs and says, I know, picked it up, knew, hit, bang. After a few days, he looked at a lot of duffers around him and he decided that he couldn't possibly know, that there was a lot to learn about golf. Second, he decided that, he became a lousy player. Boom. Any one of you, when you were young, had the experience of walking up to a piece of machinery, equipment, or something of the sort, and you knew exactly what to do with it. A child is a very natural actor until someone tells him how to act. He knows acting. After all, life is, to a large degree, an act. He can come on this day total unselfconsciousness and so forth. They're terrific. Until somebody tells him, dear, aren't you sure you're all right now? You're not going to have stage fright, are you? You're not going to get nervous. No, you won't get nervous in front of the audience. It's just part of acting is getting nervous, is having stage fright. Well, all right, I'll be nervous. It's just about that bad. But I know is up here. It is that terrific, easy self-confidence, self-assurance of being able to do anything or to know anything. One examination by perception, you know. Actually, up here is a full knowledge of physics. How do you think theta can build an algae with the terrifically complex organic compounds in an algae unless it knows organic chemistry. Very complex subjects. Nobody's caught up to how to synthesize the human mind, low on the tone scale, has not yet learned how to synthesize some of the compounds contained in an algae. Yet the original life form put together those compounds. Interesting, isn't it? You've all felt that there is a terrific amount of knowledge someplace back of you, that if you could just tap it, somehow you would be a very wise person. All you've got to do is come up the tone scale. See? You'll tap it. Has some unfortunate liabilities. Ross walks down the aisle about to tell me that Jack says that I should tell you about advanced procedure down below, that it's now in. He gets to about there, and I know I'm supposed to tell you about advanced procedure, and he gets up here and he goes through the... He tells me about it. He's probably running much too slow, and I'm sure I am. Dave comes up and tells me, you know, today I was using some of the techniques you're talking about. Sure, I thought of them yesterday. He thought of them probably same time. It's interesting. If you want ESP, it's there. So what? If you want hocus pocus and telekinesis and God knows what else, you can have them all. They're all there. So what? If you had complete theta communication, if everybody's theta facsimiles were available to you, if all knowledge was available to you instantly, completely, and if you had answered up all the way along the line on everything, and you were perfection itself, you'd be dead. It's top static. Yet that knowledge is there. Those things are all available if you want them. If you want them. God help the mystic. Without any material bridge built through epistemology, the mystic goes hopping around from stone to stone in the raging torrent of the unknown. He gets himself trapped, caught, drowned, upset, boom, bang. Oh, it's a very dramatic life being a mystic. Very, very dramatic. Without being able to handle any of his theta facsimiles, he tries to handle all the theta facsimiles. Gets complicated. Slows down to a point without knowing how to speed up. Terrific liability. We should bow our heads for 30 seconds for all those brave or ignorant people of the past who have gone into top static just for the devil of it. They've left their bodies strewn through Asia to enter mysticism without knowing the roads and bridges of epistemology. It's a very foolish thing indeed. Yet there's tremendous amount today. Here's Rhine playing around down here at Duke University. Very demonstrable. There's nothing wrong with his figures. He shows that ESP exists. There's all sorts of things exist that he plays with. There's also prediction exists. Of course, theta hasn't got any time. You might as well be able to read the 36th card as the first. Why? Because the second you get up in here, you don't have any motion. And the evident reason for your existence is gathering a few experiences, but it's not gathering them to put them in the past. It's to have them now. And when a person feels that he is unable to have experiences now, he goes ransacking the past. Or he starts daydreaming up into the future, equally without action. The past is dead. The only moment you will ever know is now. And you will continue to know the moment of now from here on out. That's all the moment there is. You can appreciate that. Try to eat yesterday's dinner in your memory. Well, you've eaten it about twice, the theta facsimile wears out and disappears. It's very amusing to go way back down the track and pick up some of the very early facsimiles. Very amusing. As a matter of fact, it's a very amusing game to take an individual and without his realizing what you're doing, turn on his invertebrate state. You could turn it on at the moment of his death. He gets sad. He doesn't know what's happening to him. He gets sad. Or you can turn on some earlier state at a moment of ecstasy. He gets very ecstatic. Wonderful, wonderful. He doesn't know why he's... You can take individuals, in short, and do almost anything you want to their theta facsimiles. If you're up here. Almost anything you want to. An auditor gets what pleasure he gets, actually, out of manipulating the theta facsimiles of another human being. But it's kind of a joke. Because there's somebody else's facsimiles, and he should be able to handle him himself. Auditor comes along and audits him. Joke. Put him back through the times when he had broken legs, and you do this, you do that, and he doesn't have any psychosomatic illnesses anymore. And wonderful, but bluntly, it's a joke. The second an auditor believes it's serious business, he starts to get aberrated and comes down the tone scale. And there's your auditor as it goes down the tone scale. He sits there and he says, this poor Preclear lost his father, lost his mother, big automobile wreck, smashed him, almost cut his head off. Poor little fellow raised as an orphan, and there he is. Typical Beacon headline. And he says, this poor Preclear, how serious, how awful. If this auditor is anywhere down along a bracket which is running pretty slow, he'll get a comparable facsimile himself. All of a sudden, he's got a stomachache. He's apparently getting the other man's facsimile. Actually, he isn't, but he apparently is. Yeah, you can audit somebody and turn yourself into a headache. But you only do it when you think, boy, this past was really serious. Sniff, sniff. Sympathy. Comparable vibration. What's the quality of death? Well, the only thing really serious about death is the fact sometimes it hurts. What's the quality of pain? And we find, oddly enough, that pain is where motion and emotion come together. And the pain is in motion and emotion, but a lot in emotion. What's death? What's pain? How can we turn them on? How can we turn them off? We know. Automatically, we ought to be well up the line here. Now, what is a person up here and a person down here? What is a mission? Talk to you about a responsibility and cause and effect. Cause and effect. Here is an individual who has inherently all eight dynamics. He is inherently dealing not only with himself, but he's dealing with future generations, his family, his group, all mankind, all life, and so forth. Potentially, he deals with all of these things at the same time. Potentially. He can do this. If he offends on one of these dynamics, fails on one of these dynamics, he'll fail on the other ones. In other words, if he goes out to hit Bill Jones in the nose and he doesn't, or if he hits Bill Jones in the nose and then Bill Jones gets up and jumps on his head, it's odd that he gets a pain in his nose, isn't it? He fails. Don't fail. Main point. Or if you do, at least have the good graces to die. Anyway. Or run it out. You got a lot of choices. Now, an individual at 40 is operating as pure cause. He is not operating as cause with motion. He is merely potential cause without effort or direction or motion. Pure cause without application. The second that he applies it, he comes down the line a little bit. And then he comes down the line, down the line, down the line, till he gets to about 20. He's handling an optimum amount of motion. Now the amount of motion he handles slows down, slows down, slows down, gets very, very slow, gets slower and slower and slower and slower and slower, and finally gets to normal. Way down here. All right, how much motion an individual handles, the optimum amount is between cause and effect. You cause yourself to be, and then you get hungry, and you eat. It is not optimum to be pure cause. It's an effort to be so. You make an effort to be pure cause. But you don't quite get there because you've got a carbon oxygen engine you have to keep going, and it's tied down in the time stream. Pure cause doesn't have any time in it, for one thing. Neither does 20 have any fixed time in it. But you start going down the tone scale and an awful amount of time gets wrapped up. What groups a time track and occludes a person? Time. The person's concept starts along this line. I haven't got any time. He makes the postulate. He says, I don't have enough time to do that. I haven't enough time to do something other. I want to do this with time. I want to do that with time. He starts, in other words, saying that he doesn't have any time. And the next thing you know, he hasn't got any time in any of his theta facsimiles, apparently. And so they'll all jam together and all jam up, and he can't handle them or spot them on the time track. Of course, because he hasn't got any time. You'll find axiom number something or other says the single arbitrary is time. That's actually true. You can extrapolate from that. I haven't got any time. I have no time. I am too busy. I'm not going to do that. Did you ever see one of these persons going around saying, you know, I haven't got any time to do this, and I am just rushed all the time, and I am so tired, I'm just rushed, and I just haven't got any time to do anything. You inspect this person in the course of his day's activities, and you find out that 23 hours, 60 minutes, and 60 seconds are wasted. Why are they wasted? Because he doesn't have any time, of course. Very, very central aberration. Now, what it does to a person's concept of time, of course, is take all the time out, which, of course, takes all the theta facsimiles out because they're filed by time. So you just pick up all the file. What would you think of a file case that suddenly had all of its alphabet cards picked up and thrown away? It'd be pretty hard to find something in it, wouldn't it? Well, when a person hasn't got any time, why, he's just picked up all the alphabet cards and thrown them away. Because things are filed by time in his mind. That's principal aberration. All right, you're trying to be a cause without being too much of an effect. You're trying to be a cause of something which will result in a pleasant, not an unpleasant effect. And then, having become the effect, you still want to be fluid enough in the business of living to be able to be cause again. And so you fluctuate between cause and effect. But when a person gets way down the tone scale, he's effect. When a person's up too high, he's cause. Here he's cause without motion. Here he's effect or motion without cause. Cause and effect. The individual, a self-determined individual, causes. He is causation. And he's causation along all dynamics. He offends against one. He causes something to happen along one dynamic, or even wants to cause something along that dynamic. Fails, he'll fail on the other dynamics. He's cause along all these dynamics. That's very easy to see. And what happens to a person down here in a complete stimulus response category? He's effect. Everything in the environment affects him. He is an affected person. A person who is completely psychotic is so completely affected that there was only one environment which affected him, and he's still in it. He's stuck with one great, big, powerful facsimile, and he's swamped. He can't handle his memory, in other words, and so his memory is up in present time, which wipes out the environment. A stimulus response mechanism is the environment is the cause, and the individual is the effect. All right? Cause is very simple. You want to eat tomorrow, so you work today. The work you do today is the cause for tomorrow, but that's cause with motion in it, you see? Supposing you went to the all-out proposition that something in your environment, let's say somebody had mounted a pheasant or something and put it on a window ledge, and you knew that you were allergic to pheasants, and the pheasant made you sneeze, so therefore you couldn't be caused today, so you don't eat tomorrow. What are you blaming? blaming the stuffed pheasant. Now I'm going to tell you something horrible. The second that you blame anything, including yourself, you elect a cause. You elect something else to be responsible. You elect a dynamic to be responsible, and it becomes the cause and you become the effect at that moment. You see how this would be? You fall downstairs and hurt your knee, and you say to Isabel, "You pushed me." You suddenly have elected Isabel to be the cause. And just as certainly, you elected yourself to be the effect. And from that moment on, Isabel is going to be more powerful than you. The environment is going to be more powerful than you. That's all you have to do. Now, if you, as an auditor, insisted and insisted and failed in your insistence to make somebody else handle your theta facsimiles for you, in other words, audit you, you elected somebody else to handle your theta facsimiles. You elected them as cause. You elected yourself as effect. You've made them much more powerful than you. And when you said, "The reason I am so aberrated is Mama," you elected her as cause and made yourself effect. You put her here and you went here. You said, "It's the teacher's fault," went here. You say, "It's this damn car," the car goes here, you go here. You say, "It's my fault, I am to blame for this," this says there's somebody to blame then, doesn't it? So in a sort of a messed up thing, you've considered yourself to be two people, one of which is over you in some fashion or other, and you are causing an effect, but you are mainly the effect because you are to blame. But this makes you more powerful than you. Only you have to be the effect because you've blamed something, so you become the lesser entity of self. And the second you become the lesser entity of self, you become subject almost wholly and completely to your own past postulates as being above change. And that's why you have to do postulate processing on individuals. You say, "I am to blame." I am to blame means that there must be two I's, because there's something's got to be there that blames I. So you say, "Well, this must be exterior to that, and therefore the I which I am blaming is me, and therefore I am the effect of this other I. So therefore everything that this I has postulated over here, I am subject to. I am the effect of everything I have been." And there is your aberration of past experience being valuable. Furthermore, the whole society forces on you the idea that your past experiences are valuable. Every time you go in to fill out an application blank, what school you've been to, what experience have you had? This society is so crazy that it believes that a fellow has to have an enormous amount of experience before he does anything. But demonstrably, this is not true. Unless a guy is way down the tone scale, so he has to do puppet response training. He does training with plane. There are people in this crowd who know very well that they could go out and, after observing a set of tools for a little while and figuring out kind of how they work, that's what that does and this does, could probably qualify as a carpenter or most anything. But there's a big aberration going on. The society says you must work 16 years as a carpenter before you can come on this job as a carpenter. Therefore, you must have had experience. Therefore, past experience is valuable. If you have a lot of past experience, you eat today. And they continually make you the effect of your own past. How do you escape this? How can you escape being the effect of your own past? How can you escape being an effect all the time? How do you escape, in other words, having the environment handle all of your memories for you, which is the same thing? If you have elected yourself as an effect, then you say, "All of my memories are affecting me too." So therefore, you can't, of course, handle them. You can't put them away or bring them back or do anything about them. You've got to suffer with them. You've got to run them. You've got to do all sorts of things with them. So it makes it necessary to do auditing on you. It's gotten now, so it takes 50, 100 hours. You don't have to spend that long. Let me tell you about this button. Of course, about the highest level of aberration there would be then is something time cause, that you have elected as time cause. You let me have any two human beings, I'll fix it up so one of them gets the other one up every morning. And regardless of their relative positions on the tone scale at the start of this operation, after a little while, you will have the one who is being gotten up here and the one who is doing the rousing here. You see how this is? This person is time cause. Who got you up when you went to school? Who got you up every morning? Well, that's just wonderful. You didn't get yourself up every morning, so you started every day with somebody else owning your time. Now, how can you possibly handle theta facsimiles if somebody else owns your time? Time for you to get up now. If I have to call you one more time. Then if they go to school and you have bells. Bells and school bells and seats and all sorts of things. And you sit down and you get up and you go here and you do this and that. Bells ring, you act. Bells ring, you act. Bells ring, you act. That bell is time cause. And you know right now, if a standard school bell, that is to say one of the gong bells, the kind they have in high school, were to ring outside that door, several of you people would instinctively get up and start playing. Because that bell is time cause. Whoever you have elected as time cause then, you have elected as your boss and the handler of your theta facsimiles or the handler of your memories. No wonder you get worried about your mind. You've appointed guardians for these facsimiles every time you appointed somebody else as cause. Every time you blamed anything or anything along any dynamic, you appointed a boss. And you made it so that you couldn't handle your own theta facsimiles anymore on that subject. Now here's phenomena. Person has a visio. He has one visio. Let him pick up that visio regardless of what it is and have him run just one emotion off of it. And it goes out. Get an occluded area and run just one emotion with regard to that occlusion. It faintly comes on and goes out. We got rid of that one. You want to know how to resolve occlusions? Don't worry about being in valence, out of valence, on your head or upside down, the devil with it. Don't worry about visios, nothing. It doesn't matter. The only place you want to be is present time. If you can't find enough to do in present time, daydream something about the future. But get the past cleaned up so that it isn't up against you. How does the past get up against you? You elect somebody else's cause and you lose control of the theta facsimile of whatever you think they have caused. You lose the control of the memory for which you blame anyone along any dynamic. How do you do this? You say, I didn't cause it. Therefore, how can you handle it? Simple. All right? Now, what are you trying to do when you blame self, space, time, energy, organisms, trees, grass, rocks, God? When you blame anything, anywhere along the line, what are you doing? You're wishing it didn't happen. You're trying to do it over again. You're trying to do it over again. You want to change it. And the aberrated solution is to blame in an effort to get somebody else to accept the blame. And if they don't accept it, you've handed them a theta facsimile, you figure. This is your fault. You handle it. And they say, it's not my fault. Wham! And you've got it right there in present time. You've got it from there on out. Any counter-effort which you experience has been blamed on something or somebody else. You have not taken the responsibility for it, in other words. Now, how do you get any action out of cause? How do you get any action at all out of cause? If you're just cause, you have to move from cause into motion in order to get any action. Obvious. You say, I will be. That's all right. You can be, but then be what? Now you've got to have motion. So, as you move out of cause, you're moving into the sphere of motion. And the way you get action and conflict and randomity, the way you get anything in motion, or even the way you get a human body and keep it running, is actually by self-determinedly appointing yourself a counter-effort for which you are not responsible. The moment you appoint something else as something for which you're not responsible, it'll fight you. Just as sure as can be. We're not talking about metaphysics now. This happens to be actually true. You say, I'm not responsible for what they did. You'll get the counter-effort of what they did. So that you can appoint a lot of counter-efforts this way and keep life very dramatic for yourself. In fact, people, when they get down along this band, spend practically nothing but fighting the things which they have appointed to be cause. And they keep on appointing these things to be cause, appointing them to be cause, and they go into trouble, and they get into more trouble, and they get into more trouble, and more stimulus response, and go out the bottom of the tone scale. It's a sure way to kill yourself. But you could drift up here and never have any cause at all if you didn't appoint some opponent. Only for gosh sakes, keep control of what you appoint as an opponent and don't get into the belief that it's a stimulus response mechanism, because that's death. Regret is the emotion which suspends in time with you things for which you have tried to blame on other people. Any time that you went against another individual with punitive action and failed, that is, say, hurt him, maimed him up, you felt sympathy afterwards. Now, that's the emotional cycle of the incident, but how do you suspend that incident? You say, I wish it had never happened. In other words, it's out of time. I wish it had never happened. That's regret. Anything that you regret that you caused, you feel you caused something and then you regretted it. In other words, you blamed yourself, caused something, blamed yourself, and followed regret. You get a visio of anything, evidently. It's because you failed afterwards and regretted it, and you're still keeping that theta facsimile next to you. And you look at it, and it's apparently a very innocuous visio, and you can't imagine how in the devil that got there. It's natural that it would be there, nothing to it. Just try experimentally, just feel the emotion of regret and just run up from the incident, just for a moment or two, the regret. There's this person standing there, you see this visio of a person standing there, and you know that nothing happened between you and that person, of course, since you have a visio of him. So you run up the line, and two or three times up from there, and you run regret, and, but gee whiz, that was the individual that the next year you told somebody something about him, and it cost him his job. You felt sorry for it. You blamed yourself and you said, I regret it. So you kept it around as a visio. But supposing you blame somebody else. Supposing somebody else got blamed. You blame somebody else. You said, it's their fault, it's their fault, it's their fault. You just bundle it right up. In present time, as an occlusion. It's black. And you try to hint. It's your fault. Accept it. And this person won't accept the blame. Won't accept the fault. Won't break down. You're stuck with it. Only you won't accept it. And you regret their inability to accept it. Run that off. You get the occlusion. It'll pile up into view, whatever it is. Now, there are four ways you can go about this. You can figure this out very simply. You have to run the times when you blamed somebody else and when you blamed yourself, the times when you refused to blame somebody else and the times when you refused to blame yourself. It all comes under the heading of regret. If you ran all the regret off the case, it would remarkably disinterbulate. More darn postulates will show up in less time, particularly on self-blame. The moment when you went below here, below 4-0, was the first moment you elected to blame yourself. The first moment you decided to blame yourself, that it was your fault, that you were guilty. There you went. Now, that's your top straight of button right now that is useful. Appointing time, cause, and so forth is a theoretical button. It's not as useful, but you can still use it. There's more to be learned about that button. You run off regret. You run off hide, trust, distrust, incidents of blame. Run off some effort if you want to. And you've practically got the package. Now, it's all listed in that 14 acts, except where it says all emotion, be sure to cover regret. You will wind up on this process by taking full responsibility as an individual for the whole cockeyed universe. And then you'll have to move down from that point in order to get some motion and have to appoint a few villains. Otherwise, you won't have any action. Now, just saying, I take full responsibility for this and that has a certain mystical aspect. It isn't very workable. But run it out till a point where you can accept full responsibility on these various things. The occlusions will be gone. So will these remarkably visible visios. Did you ever notice the visios on, I'm sorry to venture on a subject people don't like, did you ever notice the visios on a past death? Why are they so brilliant when they're there? Regret, 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 regret. Poor me, I'm dead. Poor me. But the shut-out ones, boy, their fault, their fault, their fault. Here I am dying and so forth. Poor me, and it's their fault. They did it to me. They did it. I'm not responsible. Here I die a martyr. You run that off a past death, and it'll flick into view. Run the blame of these other people and the regret. And for those who don't know that strange phenomenon, you can take almost anybody in, just in off the street at random and run them by effort processing, and they'll wind up. One day I took a salesman and I processed him by effort processing for a few minutes, just made him motion against motions which he was receiving, and he was found himself staring down rather dazedly at a Confederate belt buckle which he was wearing. In short, you can go back down the whole time track. It's very strange. I'm not responsible for it. That gives me some randomity. It got to the point, you see, where you're responsible for death, too. You probably wouldn't be able to kick off when you wanted to, and gee whiz, who knows, the Democrats might get in again. So, anyway, here then is your subject of cause and effect, responsibility, and memory. And the whole thing can be simply summed up into this line. If you can put a preclear into a state where he can handle his own memories, and where his own memories aren't handling him, and where the environment isn't handling his memories for him, you got a boy. You really got a boy. This is so far above what we used to consider this mythical state of clear. I don't think there's very much comparison to it. There isn't, actually. It is a method of getting there without running out everything there is in the past. It's a method of both getting rid of the past and having the past. And so what, the past? You can take present time processing and just process the various factors of blame in present time. What you blame yourself for in present time, what you don't blame yourself for in present time, what other people are blaming you for in present time. You just process these things out, and this fellow suddenly start walking around about 8.5 feet tall. That's a metaphor. Okay? Make sense to you? Well, then in stunned silence, I bid you a very good evening. Thank you.